and welcome to another episode of Worst Collection Ever. This is the show where we tell you about the worst comic book collection in existence, and it just happens to belong to us. I'm Jen.
And I'm Sean.
How you doing?
How are you?
You all right over there?
I was just rubbing my eye.
I know. I'm like, oh, you doing okay?
Yeah, I don't know. I was just a little bit of a sleepy.
Yes.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. Thanks for being here. We do appreciate that. And we'll get into our book, I guess, in just a tiny bit. But we did go see Dune.
Part two.
I said Dune 2, but Dune Part 2 the other week, last week or whatever. And we saw it on the weekdays, on Tuesday.
We did see it on Tuesday because we were going to go on the weekend, but it was like sold out everywhere.
Yeah.
And
which is awesome, actually.
It was totally awesome, but I didn't really feel like sitting at the very, very front of the theater.
No.
So we went on Tuesday, and it was good. It was enjoyable.
I know it's interesting just for a lot of folks who are genre fans, mm-hmm. you know, like fantasy books and all that stuff. They, you know, see these new movies, or those people that didn't know about the Dune franchise really prior to this, you mm-hmm. know, these new movies. I think it's just interesting to see the reactions based on that, you mm-hmm. know, how people kind of like look at it in terms of like, oh, this is just a completely cromulent fantasy movie that, you know, I enjoy. But then you have people who either read the books or saw the 1984 movie,
mm-hmm.
you know, or just have kind of been entrenched in that culture longer and maybe have a bit more of a different outlook,
right,
as to what these movies move to them. But I will say that from my perspective, having seen all of the movies,
mm-hmm.
with the exception of the sci-fi series remake they did, but having seen all those movies, I have to say I liked it. You know, I've liked them. I've liked them all. I didn't know, like, I think for 1984 Dune.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I knew it was weird.
Yeah.
And I really enjoy it being as weird as it is, you know, and being kind of, I don't know. I think it's okay to follow. Like, it doesn't, I mean, there's like, you know, stuff that's jumping around, you know, obviously, you know, because they're trying to fit in like a shit ton of things
mm-hmm.
in this one movie, you know, the 1984 movie, and they do, but it's not, you know, it doesn't really, you know, cover enough bases to make sense, but on a basic level, but I do like it.
Mm-hmm.
And the new Denis Villeneuve movies, they're just, you know, they're for modern audiences, and they feel right.
Yeah.
You know, and he's a pretty good director. I think he did Arrival. Like, I thought that was an interesting movie. You know, it wasn't great, but it was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I dug it. So yeah. I'm glad, and I'm glad it's making a lot of money, and I'm glad a lot of people are adapting it into their culture, you
yeah.
know, of things that, like, when you got kids who are like 16, 17, and they're going to see this movie, you know, and they got the, you know, you got the young stars in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's for them. And it's something that hopefully will allow some folks, you know, that, you know, these other folks to create something on their own that's inspired by this.
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was cool. I mean, it's just like a fully realized world. Like, you know, we saw the first Dune. I'm not a huge Dune head. I've never read the books, you know, none of that sort of stuff. But I really enjoy how it's like, you know, there's not like a ton of explaining needed,
right,
but you still understand like the levels of what is going on, like
yeah.
the cultures. And, you know, you've got the Southern, you know, people who are like really religious and all that sort of stuff, and how that kind of works within this world and how it's affecting everybody else who's on Arrakis. Yeah, it's just really, really interesting. And I thought the visuals were cool as hell.
There's a lot of it that I feel is rooted in the 1984 version.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also, you know, a good chunk of it that is for, you know, for the modern audience. And it just, you are just, you know, in the new way with the, you know, with, yeah, obviously the computer graphics.
Right.
But there's also, I mean, a lot of really great makeup.
Mm-hmm.
And special effects, and, you know, and just costumes and stuff like that. Like, I like seeing that shit.
Yeah, it's cool.
I like seeing that shit because it's just, it's showing that there's people working on this movie that really care about what this shit looks like, you know, and that looks like it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And just something I think you brought up that I thought was interesting, like, it's a fully realized world. There's, even though there are things that they do try, you know, obviously try to lead you through. Yeah. There's not a ton of handholding, even in that first movie.
Oh yeah.
And I appreciate that.
No, I do too, because it's like one of those things where you're actually trusting your audience, which is kind of nice, especially because now it's always like, audiences are stupid. Let's make sure we like literally explain every last thing. And it's like, no, just trust your audience to be like, okay, I get it. I know where we are.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think
I'm along for this ride. Yeah. And I think it takes, especially like in today's, you know, world of cinema, I think that takes a lot of confidence.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Confidence. Yeah. Yeah. Especially, you know, in your filmmaker, but also in the people, you know, the producers and everybody that's making these movies. I mean, and I think that had this first movie not done as well as it did, you know, obviously the second one would have like a fucking McDonald's in it or something.
Right.
You
know? Right. It's like,
the Iraq is McDonald's. Like the worms just got little hats on. Like,
Oh, maybe one of those little baby worms.
They grow up to get bigger. So you got, you know, when they're not gigantic worms, but they're not babies. They got to work. They got to do something.
That's like, it's true. You know, they got to earn their keep somehow.
Make a life of water, please. So, you know, just that would be a good idea. So, but Dune 2, the Dune Part 2, whatever, it's pretty great. So,
yeah,
if you haven't seen it, if you plan to see it, make sure you get to see it.
Yeah, it's fun.
Hey there. Do you like comic books? Do you like superhero TV and movies? Well, come on over and check out the Capes and Lunatics podcast. We have such shows as Capes and Lunatics and Super Connectivity, where we cover everything new and current and popular in the world of superheroes. And we also have episode-by-episode reviews of the Marvel Netflix shows and a monthly discussion of everything current on the DC Comics character Nightwing and a few other surprises all the time. So come join us for the Capes and Lunatics podcast.
So, what are we reading this week?
I was just going to ask you.
Oh.
Say, do you want to get into the book?
Yes, I think we do.
And I think we do. So, this book for the week is going to be Marvel Team Up number 124 from December 1982. And this is going to start a run for us. It's going to be three books.
Yeah.
So, we're going to be doing 125 and 126. And we're going to be spending some time with Spider-Man.
Uh-huh.
And some of his friends.
Oh, man.
We've done Beast and Spider-Man before on this show.
Mm-hmm.
Very long time ago. And this one features, obviously, Spider-Man and the Beast.
Mm-hmm.
And on the cover, we have an action scene with Spider-Man and Beast fighting Professor Power.
Ooh.
Professor Power is back with a vengeance, it says. And it looks like, you know, they're fighting him and they're crushing the side of a building or something like that. I do want to say, I have to real quick point out Professor Power's color scheme.
It's pretty cool.
It's pretty cool. It's very unique because I don't know a ton of things, like even G.I. Joe's, because we were just talking about this today about, like, you know, about some of the G.I. Joe colors or even like just, you know, comic book characters that have the scheme, and basically it's green gauntlets and a green helmet and boots and a, you know, and belt mostly green and some shoulder pads, but the rest of his body, like his suit, is like a burnt orange.
Yeah,
I guess you would say.
Yeah.
And it reminds me, and I was thinking about this a long time ago, there's a game on in the NES called Baseball Stars.
Okay.
And in that game, you can do a lot of customization. It's actually a very good game, you know, and the amount of customization you're able to do on an NES game that came out, I believe it was like 1990 or even before that, is pretty remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things you could do is, like, they might have like preset teams or preset colors you could change to. And I remember a long time ago when me and Brian, you know, we're brothers, maybe Mark, I don't know. I just remember we were playing around with this game. And we used a team that had these colors. And if I recall, I think we called them the Fardos.
Fartos?
The Fartos. I think it was F-A-R-T-O-E-S. The Fartos.
The Fartos.
So, I don't, yeah, so yeah, the Fartos.
Really funny.
But that's what we got here. And, I can't forget on the bottom here. This is the thing that if I, in 1982, was looking for a comic to read, I would be like, I gotta buy this book. It says, plus, a major new development in everybody, in the life of everyone's favorite Aunt May.
Oh, I know. Like, yeah.
Like, who could give a shit? I'm sorry. Yeah. Look, I mean, I know there's probably a lot of people that grew up reading this comic in this era.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're, you know, in that period of Spider-Man's, you know, existence, that Aunt May was obviously a big part of his life. I always was like, I don't care. You know, yeah. Like, I just want Spider-Man. I just want him screwing around with Mary Jane, taking pictures, you know, trying to figure that shit out, and occasionally going to see his Aunt May, but not like, you know, this woman. The woman was dust in 1982, and she continued to be she was pretty much a mummy from like the very beginning.
Yeah.
So anyways, so we're starting off with this book here. I didn't take any notes because we were just kind of reading this and just kind of going through it. So we'll just kind of do that. But I think this is, I don't know. I thought this was pretty easy read.
Yeah, definitely. I do want to say about the cover. Though. So we have, what's his name? Professor Power or whatever. He is like punching Beast through a building, and Beast really looks like either he's a yes. broken action figure and his leg has been ripped completely off, or he has AI leg.
Yeah, the
Where way it's that, just like, we don't know how to render this leg, so just put it over here.
The way that he's drawn, like, he's being knocked backwards, but, like, he's being knocked so far back that it's, like, it's also, like, his right leg is kind of in a mangled way.
Yeah.
It doesn't really look great.
No.
Yeah, but anyway, so the book is the story. Well, I'll just say the story here, because I get frustrated sometimes when you're trying to go read the, like, this, what's the title of the story, but you have to go, like, 30 pages in to find it.
Yes.
I mean, it's just on the next page, but mm-hmm. nonetheless. The Ties That Bind, script by J.M. DeMatteis.
Our buddy. We've read some stuff of his before.
Oh, yeah, no, I mean, obviously, very, very, very well-regarded.
Oh, yeah.
Then you have Cary Gamble doing the breakdowns and Mike Esposito doing the inks. I don't know enough. I thought, what are the breakdowns? I don't know exactly what that means. Like, is he just the artist? Like, I know the inks are the inker.
Yeah, I don't know what the breakdown is.
You know, letterers, colors, editor, yeah. You know, whatever.
Yeah, I don't know what that means. Couldn't tell you.
But it was to start off, and we're in the Virginia Mountains. There's a castle, a medieval castle in the mid-Virginia Mountains that apparently wasn't there.
Yeah, like 24 hours ago.
24
like,
hours ago.
So, I have a really good question. So, did, like, teleport there?
I don't know.
But it never really explains.
Well, here's the thing. So, I did a little, because I've heard of Professor Power.
Uh-huh.
You know, previously. And I did a little just looking him up just to see what his deal was. And it's kind of explained in this book, but this castle and these Roman centurions
yeah.
that are standing outside the adamantium door.
Yeah, where did they come from?
Where did they come from? Why are they there? Why can't you just have like a regular like ass a
dude?
Bunker?
Yeah, like just like a dude. Why do they have to be Roman centurions? Like, did you go back in time and get these dudes?
Was it like a Bill and Ted's thing? You know,
it could have been.
It's like so great. You know? Either that or you're just dressing up your staff
uh-huh.
in Roman clothes.
Oh, man. Could you just imagine? Like, you'd have to have a lot of money to be like that crazy.
Yeah.
Because they'd just be like, yeah, I'm not going to just do this for any dude.
If you captured like real Romans, like they'd probably be like, what the fuck? What are we doing here? Stab with these, you know, with our spears and try to get the hell out. Now you got 19, you know, early Romans running around in the Virginia mountains.
There's also like something here where, at the very beginning, where we're like getting into the mountains, and it's just like, look at the, like, you could basically see the hillbilly families like crawling up the mountains.
Shadows of feuding hillbilly families creeping up the rocky incline.
I'm like, come on now.
are we trying to introduce maybe hillbillies v Romans?
Perhaps
that was at the intent, where it's like, you know, J.M. DeMatteis is like, look, I just want to give this people a taste, but I don't know if we're gonna follow through with it, you know. But we'll see if people we'll see what people write. You know, if people write in and say, hey, you got to kind of promise hillbillies be Romans. And, you know, now you're not because, oh, we got to put that in the next issue. You know?
I know, I'm saying.
Spider-Man goes to the, you know, goes on a hike and he's like, oh, shit, hillbillies be Romans. I better get my web cartridges.
I better do something.
Better do something. But now we're inside of this lab, apparently. And now you got scientists doing science with a bunch of machines.
Doing some real freaky science.
Well, basically, so here's the deal. Like, Professor Power. So I'll go ahead and do my best to kind of explain, because we kind of explained it here.
Yes.
Professor Power was like a presidential advisor of some sort, tactical stuff, like war, but I don't know, politics, whatever. And his son was in a war.
Mm-hmm.
And he came back and he suffered from shell shock, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Professor Power... Because Professor Power, I think it's Anthony Power and his son is Matthew Power.
Yes,
so
I think that's right.
This is a real
right.
name. Like, it's not just a nickname. Like, they have, you know, it's like Max Power.
Right.
Like, real name.
The power you'd love to touch. Sorry. Yeah.
So.
Max Power.
He.
Not even a laugh for that, really.
Was that from something?
It's from The Simpsons.
I know Max Power's from The Simpsons. I didn't know you did the thing with your hands.
Yeah, I'm singing the song because that's what Homer starts doing. He's like, Max Power, the power you'd love to touch. Like,
I don't remember
like,
that part.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Nothing, huh? Nothing.
I didn't. I just thought you were just riffing.
You just thought I was randomly singing a song. Well, I do that sometimes.
You do. You also had your hands out. So I was kind of like.
Because he does the thing with his hand. He's like doing a thing.
Oh, yeah. I just remember Max Power. I just remember the name.
Yeah.
And I remember that's what Hank Scorpio was really impressed with.
Yeah.
Hey, Homer, could you kill a few henchmen on the way out?
That would really help me out.
So his son is at shell shock. And he got Professor Xavier to come in and try to, like, go inside his son's mind and help massage it.
Yeah.
Or help him, like, come out of
He basically got wunned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He got he has body parts.
He has body parts, but like his mind is totally gone. It's like a reverse Metallica's one. So he has all
Doctors
the stuff.
Have given me arms, give me legs.
So his mind is totally gone. And like Xavier couldn't really help him.
Well, Xavier couldn't help him. And I guess Professor Power got real freaked out about it.
Mm.
And so he hired his own guy, the X-Men villain Mentallo.
Why? Okay, sorry.
So because you could see this guy, there's a floating head.
I know, but like, why would you go to Metallo?
Well, because he's an impulsive guy. This Professor Anthony Power.
Mm-hmm.
So his son got fight. They're basically like these two psychics fighting in this kid's head.
Yeah,
and they somehow messed up his mind so much that basically really turned him into a vegetable.
Yeah,
and this kind of now puts Professor Power in the idea that he wants to get vengeance on, you know, Xavier and the X-Men.
Yeah.
So what I can gather is that I don't know if this was always the thing or if this is the debut of this armor.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was like, well, I'm gonna put my son in this cool armor. And then since I'm older, I'm going to transfer my mind into my young son's body.
Yeah, this is kind of really weird. Like, it's one of those, like, because my son, he can no longer fulfill all the dreams I had for him, which is kind of like, even if he hadn't like gone crazy, you don't know he was going to do what you wanted. Anyway, it's not whatever. And he's like, so now I'm just going to like steal this young body of his and shove my mind in it. So I'm going to like reverse poor things. Because like in Poor Things, there's a baby brain implanted in Emma Stone's body. And so it's like reverse Poor Things with no fucking.
Good. I haven't seen Poor Things yet. Kind of weirds me out a little bit.
I'm not here for it.
I might get to it eventually, but I'm glad we didn't go this route in this book, you know, this Marvel book.
Yeah, me too.
So, but they're doing the science here, which, Jesus Christ, look at the setup here, man. So many wires and stuff.
I know, like it's intense.
It's a lot going, there's a lot of pieces. That's a lot of, like, resources to put into transferring an old man's mind into a young man's body inside of a green and brown suit.
Yeah.
So, but it works.
It sure does.
It works, and he comes out, he's
so, like, what?
Oh, yes.
we never really discuss what happens to the other body. I'm assuming, does it just lay there?
Like, I think it just kind of lays there.
Or does it explode? Because, like, the thing kind of, like...
Oh, I don't know. I
mean, so maybe the other body is dead?
From what I understand, eventually, down the line, Professor Power, like, this body gets murdered by a U.S. agent.
Oh, okay.
And
okay.
Eventually, the old man's mind comes to, but he still has this suit, and then he's kind of just, he's just a jabroni now.
Mm-hmm.
So Professor Power, from what I can gather, is one of those things where... they created this villain,
mm-hmm.
and you could feel that there was some hopes for him.
Yeah.
Like that they were going to try to get him over
uh-huh.
in some ways. I was surprised that he's had less appearances than I thought he did.
Yeah.
Because he ends up like fighting the X-Men and Spider-Man. He ends up in like, you know, X-Factor. He gets like kind of an upgrade,
mm-hmm.
you know, but then eventually he just ends up in like recent times as a part of the Secret Empire.
Yeah.
And he's just like a jabroni there, just kind of doing stuff because that's just what ends up.
Yeah. You know,
that's just how it was. But you feel like there was something here where they're like, we may be able to do something with this guy.
Yeah.
But really the only thing that he can do, because we kind of see, you know, him doing some stuff here, but he's, you know, he's got super strength in this exoskeleton.
Yeah.
And there's like alpha converters in his brain that allow him to discharge power blasts through his, you know, his hand or particularly his finger. He just does a lot of pointing.
Yes.
He's like, yeah, you know, it's always index
fingers.
Yeah,
and apparently he has to like charge them up somehow.
Yeah.
I'm assuming like they just charge on their own after they've been used.
Yeah. I mean, which is in a way, you know, a good way to be like, he's not just a super powerful guy in a mech suit that could just constantly shoot things. Like he's, you know, there's obviously some flaws in this design.
Yeah.
So it allows for him to be, you know, defeated.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so but then he's like, yeah, I'm gonna go and you know, slap around the mutants and
nice.
You know, let's go.
Yeah, you gotta do something.
So we jump to JFK Airport, and Beast is being super extra, just jumping around this airport.
So
which I love Hank, I love Beast, but
oh, I do too. And this is kind of what I had like a question, because my main exposure to Beast has always been the X-Men cartoon.
Yeah.
Right?
Are you confused by his clothes?
No, I'm not confused by his clothes. And I know, like, so is Hank a doctor in these books? Or does that happen later?
He was a doctor.
He's still a doctor.
I think he's still kind of a doctor, yeah.
Okay.
Kind of a doctor. Well, because the reason why he's blue.
No, I know why it's blue. That's not the thing. It's like, because he's so, like, jovial and like over the top and excited in these books, as when you see him in the animated series, he's a little bit more subdued and just kind of fascinated by stuff and always like reading and like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You see that's the kind of the difference.
I think they probably toned it. They toned it down in the animated series.
Well, but I also don't know like how he changes from here until the 90s.
Well, he's always kind of, I think he's always kind of been this way.
Yeah.
Up until like the later, like the 2000s, where like the Dark Beast kind of gets introduced. And
Dark Beast?
Oh, yeah. That's like, it's the Age of Apocalypse stuff. Like, it's stuff that like I don't really know much about. And I just kind of know he's just a cool dude. He's just a cool dude.
Yeah.
You know, he's into science fiction. He probably loves Dune.
He was there.
He was there.
Opening night.
He was there. He had his hands in both two worm things full of popcorn at the same time. He was so excited.
Oh, that's so funny.
But yeah, no, he's always kind of been this way, I think. And he was, yeah, but he was a doctor because he was still, I think the reason why he's blue, mm-hmm. if I recall, was he was working for Roxxon, or he was working for one of those companies, you know, Raytheon.
He was working for Raytheon, okay.
And, you know, something, I drank this and now I'm blue.
Oh, is that how he got blue? Because I know at the very beginning when he was invented, he was like a regular looking human.
Yeah. And now he was blue. Trying to like figure something. There was some sort of, I don't know if he was trying to be less Beast or trying to work on something else. I mean, I should know this, but yeah, he drank it and he became, actually his fur at the time was like gray.
Mm-hmm.
And then he became blue. He became a blue boy.
I like a blue boy.
He might have, yeah. Or maybe further drink. I think if every time he just keeps trying to fix it, he just keeps getting more and more blue and hairy. So, yeah.
So basically he's like cousin It here in a little bit.
Eventually, yeah.
Nice.
But he's a big blue guy here, and he's jumping through the airport. And he's with his lady friend, Vera.
Uh-huh. Vera,
and he's going to meet his parents.
Yes. He's picking them up from the airport.
He's picking them up from the airport. He's the first thing they come out of the tunnel and see him. He's on his one hand, just like, hi, mom. Hey!
Yeah. Like, he's literally like springing through the airport, which going to an airport in general is usually very shitty. I would be extremely annoyed if someone was cartwheeling down.
Yeah. I'm
by
already
the bag
mad that I'm in an airport.
Yeah. You're not a good airport guy.
No.
Mm-mm.
Not at all.
Mm-mm. No.
I don't do airports.
You
I
don't
do airports. I typically don't do planes.
Yeah, you're not a plane guy.
No. I'm a bit fussy. But So he's up there and he's talking to his father, and his father's like, he's like, oh, you're blue, you look handsome, you know. Have you ever considered
electrolysis?
Which I'm like, I kind of would like to see how that goes, because
same.
Just zapping all his fur off. He's just a bald blue, but he's just a bald blue guy underneath, like, because the skin, because he's not like, it's fur.
Yeah.
But like, I never got the impression that underneath his fur is like, you know, general like Caucasian flesh.
Isn't it just like, wouldn't it just be skin?
You mean like just regular skin?
I assume so. Yeah.
Or blue skin.
Oh, I don't know. I never really thought about that. Probably blue.
That's what I think, because I feel like
it's kind of
like,
it blue.
It's kind of like a cat.
That's what, know? I was just thinking. Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably blue.
So, yeah. But he's, you know, having a thing, and his mom is there, and his mom is just being real grumpy.
Mm-hmm.
She's literally saying mutter, grumble, mutter.
I mean,
and, you know,
can't blame her.
She's upset, and, you know, Hank's just trying to be real, real cool. And, you know, his mom is just like, I can't. She's not saying anything. She's being real.
Yeah, she's just like
difficult.
Completely silent.
Yeah, which is.
It's not because she had a shitty flight.
No. So now we're in Queens, and we're moving Aunt May into her house.
Yeah. So Aunt May apparently was at like an old age home with these other people. And they were like, you know what? Fuck this place. We're going to just randomly move into a house together.
It's gonna be like, you know, it's like Animal House, but for old people.
Yeah,
you know, and they're all gonna get together, and you got, you know, this old person, you got some beatnik guy, you got her kind of boyfriend.
Yeah,
this guy Nathan,
mm-hmm.
who, you know, it comes into play later, and you got, you know. There's this one chick here. Just want to point out. There's this one chick here that looks like Adrienne Barbeau.
Uh huh.
That I don't know what her name is, but she has a little part later.
Uh huh.
Mia. Mm. Mia Carrera. Tia Carrera.
Oh, it's Tia Carrera.
Tia Carrera,
nice.
Ladies and gentlemen, star of Wayne's World, was first actually made her appearance in this Spider-Man comic book.
It's good to know.
She was a comic book character before she was a real actress.
Yeah.
Correct. But yeah, they were just kind of watching this, these old people do things.
Yeah.
Which is like, I'm like, cool.
Right? Yeah.
They're looking at Peter's baby pictures. And I don't think I told you. So I was thinking at the end, because how in the Madam Web, we haven't seen Madam Web yet, but I've
yes.
heard enough about it. But at the end of Madam Web, or sometime in Madam Web, you meet Peter's. There's a baby shower.
There's a baby because Peter Parker is being born apparently in this movie, but like we can't actually say his name.
So here's my thing is that what they should do is at the end they have like, you know, a scene at like a scene at the like after the credits, and it's the birth of Peter Parker, right? And it just goes black. You just hear wah. Mr. Stark!
Oh, God, no, no!
And it over. It's like, oh, no! Mr. Stark, I want to be a Spider-Man!
No, Mr. Stark.
But, yeah, so they're looking at these baby pictures, and everybody... Actually, I think his one friend here, I think this guy's name is Steve,
uh-huh.
or whatever, and he's like, look at this baby picture. He's like, you were kind of cute. My folks said it looked like a dried piece of fruit when I was born. I was like, oh, my son, the raisin.
Well, you know, when I was born, my mother said I looked like a little old man.
Well, I mean,
because babies do. You're all, especially like ones that, you know,
you're just in ambiotic fluid.
Well, yeah, you're all wrinkly and stuff. And if you're not a C-section baby, you know, your head's all fucking weird looking. So, you know, then you're extra weird looking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's like this beatnik guy here who's like extra mummy looking.
Extra mummy.
Oh, he's like, I feel like he's older than Aunt May. He's just like, he's just drawn older.
Well, that's true. I mean, we don't actually know how old Aunt May is supposed to be, except old.
But anyways, this old guy, he's like, you talk about writing a poem. He's like literally like a beatnik guy.
Well, what they decide after everybody moves in and they see Peter's stupid baby pictures, they're like, you know what we should do? We should go get Indian food.
Yes.
And fucking great idea.
I love Indian food.
I love Indian food as well. But they're like, some of these old people are confused by Indian food. Basically my parents.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm sure there's some confusion about what they're getting into.
Yeah, so they have to like drive somewhere. So anyway, they get in.
He says that it's near this restaurant, is near Rockefeller Center. And then we jump to this restaurant.
They're in Queens.
Right.
Why are they driving?
They're in Forest Hills, Queens. They're driving into Rockefeller Center.
Why?
And somehow.
I'm sure you could take the subway.
But somehow. But here's the thing. You keep that in mind. It's at Rockefeller Center, right?
Mm, yep.
Very much big buildings, big tree, whatever, there's a lot.
It's a very populated space.
But it's also very city looking.
Oh, 100%. Yes.
They show this building. It looks like Casa Bonita.
Oh, it absolutely does look like Casa Bonita.
The flavors of Bombay, and I'm like, get the fuck out of here. That building is not in the middle of New York City. Come on. It's
especially not near Rockefeller Plaza.
Not a chance.
No, absolutely not. And just as an FYI for people who are new here, Casa Bonita is an actual restaurant. I know you may have heard about it on South Park. It's literally real.
Yeah.
And it has been in Denver for decades.
Yes, it has.
Anyway.
But yeah, this is basically like, there might as well be like people jumping off of fucking elephants into a pool of water. I don't know.
Do it.
But yeah. But it just happens that Beast is there with his wife, his family and Vera, and they're eating, and the father's like, yo, Indian food. What is this swell glop I'm eating? This is some swell glop.
Good Lord.
Mother's like, I wish we had more American food. It's like the first thing she says.
Yeah.
And then Beast is like, so like, what's your problem? And he goes to like maybe reach for her or whatever. And she's like, don't touch me, you freak. She is wilded out. Everybody's like, what the hell's wrong with you? What's going on? Yeah.
And then Hank's like, what? And then she's like, oh, I didn't want to have a freak child or whatever. And she like storms out of the restaurant.
And then the father is like, he's like, look, she's just upset because I was exposed to radiation.
Mm-hmm.
His father was exposed to radiation. They had a mutant child.
Yeah.
And she wanted to have as much of a normal life as possible. And they were able to do that as much, whatever. But then you went off to do Xavier. You hang out with Xavier. And that really, hurt her because, she didn't want you to have to be a part of the fucking X-Men. She just wanted you to go to school and maybe get a good job.
Right.
Or just live a normal life. Yeah,
I think he actually says a CPA. So she was really hoping that he would be an accountant.
Yeah.
I'm like, but he became like a PhD scientist. That's like super exciting.
That's pretty good.
Fucking great.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
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 I don't know who made more money in the early 80s, scientists or accountants. Maybe accountants did.
Even if you didn't make any money in the 80s, it was still a lot of money. Oh, does that make any sense?
Yeah, like, no, that's true.
Because you could still like afford housing and just have like a regular ass job in the 80s.
Of course.
Which you cannot do today.
Yeah. And so she turned out, so she got even more upset because he became blue and hairy.
Yeah.
And now that really like set her off.
Yes.
And he goes out to chase after her doesn't walk out. Beast can't just walk out of a room.
Oh, no. He has to like grab onto any like beam and like flip and cartwheel
he's swinging from a chandelier, and his father's like, oh, you scamp. But he's out there and he's literally just bounding out there. And as he's out there, he goes to, he's on the street, and Professor Power is hiding, and he blasts him.
Mm-hmm.
And blasts off all his clothes.
Oh yeah, that is pretty. Except his underwear. What a trick!
Well, those are his, his fighting underwear. So he's always got them on. Those fighting briefs. He's kind of like a wrestler. He's got the high waisted trunks.
That's right. He's always wearing them.
Yeah,
he's always prepared.
He's always got his gear.
He's always prepared to jump in that ring, much like JR is always prepared to say, "By God."
But yeah, he blows off his pants and shirt, and Professor Power is like, "All right, well, I'm gonna kick your ass, because your mutants are freaks, and I'm coming for Xavier and coming for you.
Right.
So you're all gonna die. And he starts going after it. And I think they're not really, they weren't, you know, the Beast himself is like, he's like, this guy's kicking my ass.
Yeah.
Like he gets,
I mean, he gets wrecked basically.
Yeah. No, he gets wrecked. Like, cause you know, he smacks him in the face and then he's throwing like a lamppost at him and things are just blowing up. And this guy's got like, you know, rocket boots and he comes at him and he does the old, you know, Beast has got the old, my stars and garters.
Oh, yeah.
My stars and garters. That's
his, I saw that too. I was like, wow.
That's his line.
I know. It's just so funny.
That's his line. He's got to get that in.
I wonder, like, I'm sure somebody knows. There's got to be somebody out there who knows when is the last time Beast said that in a comic book.
Probably like last week.
Oh, I doubt it. I don't think he says that anymore.
Oh, is it too extreme now?
No, it's just something that's kind of old fashioned. So I'm sure.
But I feel like he's the kind of character that has always kind of retained that. Like, I can
see that.
To be honest, it's the Uncanny Avengers or something. I bought the trade like a couple years ago.
Uh-huh.
It's, you know, with Beast and Wonder Man in it. And it's fairly recent. And it's called Stars and Garters.
Oh, really?
And I think that he's, you know, he's kind of in the same way, you know, like he's probably saying that still. I don't know. I mean, I'm not, again, we don't do the modern comics as much as, you know.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. That's why I'm like, I got to guess about these things because I don't know.
So they're fighting and Beast goes flying and Professor Powers after him and they fly, just happen to fly right in front of the car that Peter is in when they're headed into the city to get Indian food.
Mm-hmm.
And Peter's, you know, like, oh, well, I know that's Beast, but I don't know who that other guy is. So I better go and take some pictures. I am Peter Parker. You know, I'm going to go take care of this. But then Agent Barbeau's looking at him.
Yes.
And she's like,
wow, he's so smart. And
he's a man of action.
A man of action. And I really love that.
And he's much cuter than my boyfriend.
Fair.
Yeah, you know, she's like cuter than Roger. So
she's like, wow, maybe I want to bone Peter Parker.
Yeah. Hey, you know.
Good for you.
Adrian Barbeau, 1982. You ain't doing bad.
Nope.
You're doing pretty good, actually.
Doing pretty good.
That's Creepshow era. Swamp Thing. Adrian Barbeau, man.
Creepshow like, era.
Creepshow era. We just watched Creepshow.
We sure did, yes.
She's awesome. She's walking around. She's like, that girl's probably got a glass full of booze and milk right now.
That is so funny.
So the giant
glass of milk that apparently is supposed to have booze in it.
So if you've ever seen Creepshow, the 1982 Romero mm-hmm. movie. So
it's fun.
It's awesome. And
Tom Atkins is in it.
But there's the final story, which is about a monster in this old crate. And Hal Holbrook plays this scientist guy or this professor that, you know, decides to lure his wife into this. To the vicinity of this monster,
mm-hmm.
you know, because, you know, Jean Barbeau plays like this booze hound, really boorish wife.
Yeah.
But on her way to this thing, she gets in the car, you know, she's getting in the car with a glass, not like a flask or like, you know, maybe like a sports bottle or something, or just a coffee tin, but like an open pint glass of milk with like whiskey or something.
I'm assuming it's like a White Russian, right?
I guess, sure. I don't know. I feel like she's just doing whatever she could get.
Yeah.
She's just like, fair. I don't care what this tastes like. You know, she probably invented scotchka, if we're being honest.
Oh, shit, not scotchka.
She's probably doing scotchka.
Scotchka.
She introduced Uncle Bill to the schnapps and Sprite.
Oh, God, no.
Peppermint. From American movie.
Oh, that poor man.
Speaking of old.
I'm surprised he didn't drop dead right then. But that was his idea. Apparently he drank it all the time.
I know. That was his thing. That was his gimmick.
Minty Sprite. So gross.
I think they serve that now. I think you can buy that. I think that's a thing you can get.
I mean, I could make it right now. We have peppermint schnapps upstairs. And I think, I don't know if we have a 7-Up. We have a 7-Up. It'd be close enough. But that sounds disgusting.
No, it's even worse. It's sugar-free 7-Up. So it's even worse.
Blech.
But this girl's thinking about, like, oh, I can't wait to, you know, get him into a bar, get together with him in a bar and, you know, drink some schnapps and Sprite together.
Gross.
Peter, you know, turns into Spider-Man. He leaves his camera by accident because he sucks.
Yeah.
And also,
it's very funny because he like goes into the alley to like change into his suit, which is underneath his clothes.
Right.
So he is wearing the suit.
Well, he also comments about how
that's
bad
what
it
I
smells.
Was going to say. he's like wearing like a dress shirt and like khakis, but underneath it, he has a suit on. And as soon as he takes off his button up shirt, he's like, ugh, I smell. And I'm like, you smelled before that. I'm sure you did. Like, if you're wearing like a nasty ass sweat covered suit under your regular clothes,
whatever is made of, like Lycra or whatever,
you smell disgusting. He smells like a locker room. He smells like feet.
Smells like feet and ass.
Oh no, not feet and ass.
How his friends don't notice?
What I mean.
You know what it is that he's hanging around these old people. That's why he hangs around old people so much, because they smell musty. They don't know that.
His friends do. They were just sitting in the car, and then
there's old people in there.
But Adrian Barbeau was sitting right next to him and didn't notice that he reeks. He smells like a fucking foot.
I don't know.
Gross. Maybe she has no sense of smell.
But maybe she's, I don't know, maybe she does. She's like, no, I need a musty man.
Oh, no, not a musty man.
Musty man.
God, no, no.
Get ready for Marvel's newest hero, Musty Man.
Ugh. Dude, just take a shower. Just wash your shit. It's cool. Actually, it would be very funny if somebody drew
stink lines.
Well,
is that what the Spidey sense is? Are those stink lines?
Those are stink lines. But I was saying, like, Peter Parker, like, standing in a laundromat, just washing the Spider-Man costume with his mask on.
Yeah.
Just waiting. Because even Spider-Man's got to do laundry.
We just have to have the mask. Like, you put a different thing on his face.
Mm.
And also, too, you could be like, yeah, oh, yeah, man, this is, I wear this at kids' parties. You know,
that's true.
I'm not Spider-Man.
I'm not Spider-Man. I'm washing this because some kid threw up on me. Right?
But yeah, Spider-Man gets there just in time for, you know, him to kind of distract Princess Power.
Oh, that'd be sweet if She-Ra showed up.
I actually kind of wish Spider-Man and Beast were fighting She-Ra.
That'd be fucking sweet.
I'd be like, oh, shit, man.
Best crossover.
That'd make more sense in the castle.
It totally would.
You know?
Yeah.
Could be in the Appalachians. You could have
Man
v Hillbillies v
It
Romans.
Also makes more sense because, like, isn't Eternia like another world?
Yes.
Like, you can open a portal between them, and that's why it's there. That would make a lot more sense than it's just randomly here.
Yeah.
No. We're not going to explain why.
And maybe it was in the previous issue that we saw the thing show up.
I doubt it.
But I doubt it. They just drew it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So he distracts Professor Power. He goes after Spider-Man, and Spider-Man's eluding him. He does actually kind of neat where he's like spins around him real fast and like jumps on his back.
Mm-hmm.
He's trying to, like, you know, kind of corral him down.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a lot of like dialogue here about father and, you know, his son. And
yeah,
I mean, I know that we should be more focused on some of this dialogue, but at the same time, it's like kind of already get this thing. Like, he took over his son's body. He wants vengeance.
Yeah, he wants vengeance. But it's also kind of like one of those things where it's like he views children as property.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, this is the 80s. And as John Mulaney says, this is before children were important. So back then, parents weren't thinking like, oh, this is an individual who's going to like have their own life. They're thinking like, this is an extension of me.
Right.
Yeah.
He tries to throw Spider-Man off. And, you know, he throws Spider-Man off. He's like, you're going to have a taste of pain.
Nice.
I like taste of pain. Throws him down. And on the way down,
that sounds like a nu metal band. Actually,
it probably was. Yeah, I think I knew them.
Yeah, they were opening for Korn.
Oh, is that like, it's like the fourth band?
Yeah, it's like
they play in the parking lot.
Yeah, pretty much. It's like they're the one that goes on stage at 3 p.m. Yeah.
Yeah, we open for Korn at like 11 a.m.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, he throws him down. On the way down, he grabs his wrists and he crushes the cartridges so he can't shoot his web.
Mm-hmm.
Beast has to stop him. And then he's, you know, we're jumping through the street. Professor Power literally goes underneath the street and then
through
and then up.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. Like, the amount of infrastructure being fucked up in the middle of Manhattan.
Yeah.
Like,
that's a lot.
The traffic.
Yeah.
It's a mess. It's terrifying.
It's a disaster.
And then you get like, yeah, everybody's watching. And then Beast's mother, Mama Beast is having a, you know, a sad up in a hotel room.
Yeah.
And apparently she could see, because she's trying to, you know, she's thinking about everything, and she could see far enough below that she could see this fight. She's
like
15 stories up, and she could see this fight and make out everything exactly.
Yeah. But
apparently she's a mutant too, because she has like
super she's got like x-ray vision or some shit.
She has like eagle eyes or some shit. And then some little kid tries to get involved. Although I do like this thought that Beast has, where he's like, oh man, we're getting our ass kicked. But Professor Marvel might just have a couple of fresh corpses to mail to Professor Xavier. Which is like, oh, is that
how I was going to say, is that what happens? You just like put them in the mail? Like
Professor Xavier, yes, that's me. I would like to sign for this corpse.
Ah.
Put it in the back.
That's really funny.
I'll open it later. I don't want to just smell it in the house. But some little kid comes running in. Because I feel like this is always happens, especially in these 80s comics. You always got like, I'm a little kid. I'm going to try to help. And then like Spider-Man or whoever that is has to like keep the kid from dying.
Yeah.
So I think Beast literally just chucks this kid at Spider-Man.
Oh,
Spider-Man,
that's awesome.
Thankfully saves him.
Yeah.
But Professor Power is like smashing him in the garbage and he's ready to smash Beast.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody's down. And this woman is 15 stories up, by the way. There's Beast's mother.
Yes.
And she's like, my son. And she runs all the way down before Professor Power, because like he's about to like blast him. He's like, well, my alpha chargers don't work.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to drop a tractor on him.
That's right. There's just like a, I'm assuming, random construction site.
Well, there is. It's New York. Because there's always something. I mean, they might as well be there because they're going to have to fix everything anyways.
Well, yes, it's a good thing.
He's about to say, long may your soul rot in hell. But we don't get that, which is kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
But as that's happening, Mama Beast comes running out. And she's like, don't do this. He's my son.
Boom.
And he has become the, I am disappointed in him, but he's my son. Basically, she's like, he has become the adult I dreamed he'd be, but he is still my son, and I gave him life.
It still sucks that he's a mutant, but maybe don't kill him.
He's like, I don't know what you know it is to be a parent, but blah, blah, blah. Oh, real quick, I just want to point out before we go ahead, I'm reading the bullpen bulletins.
Mm-hmm.
And so obviously Stan Lee and blah, 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 and Jim Shooter have things to say, but Spider-Woman 47. Remember Marvel staffer Ann Nocenti's writing debut in Bizarre Adventures number 32?
Oh, no.
Well, we and you liked it so much, we're giving her a crack at her own series. This is where it starts.
This is where it starts. This is where
it picks up. It gets worse.
I mean,
and your nemesis.
She was my nemesis when she was writing on Catwoman because she didn't make any sense.
No.
But I don't know if that is like something that occurred over time. Like maybe when she started, it was like, wow, I totally get where, but like by the end, it was nonsensical.
Yeah. Maybe she didn't like comics as much then. She was like really into it back in 1982.
And either
then,
that or, you know.
And it was a 2010?
Yeah, you know, probably about
that
then.
Time, you know, because she wrote on Daredevil.
Yeah, she did a lot of stuff.
She did a lot of stuff, you know, but yeah. So I saw that and I thought of you.
No.
Your battles. But she distracts, Mama Beast distracts Professor Power enough that Spider-Man's able to web him and grab him mm-hmm. down, and the tractor falls on him. Or
it's a big old construction machine.
It's a crane.
Yeah.
Crane, there's a name for mm-hmm. a crane. Falls on top of him, and Mama Beast is talking to her son, and as that's happening,
it is kind of funny though, because like Spider-Man pulls him back, you know, and the tractor machine thing falls. Really should have gone forward just because of like momentum wise, probably should have fallen on Beast anyway.
Well, it wasn't over hit, like he had
no, because he's holding it like this, right? And he's gonna throw it, but if Spider-Man pulls him backwards, he goes like this.
I don't know about that.
Yes, momentum wise, you fold. No, because
he's pulling Professor Power back. And yes, he's flattening it out, so it's just
no. He's gonna fold if he hits him like around the waist. You're gonna if somebody pulls you like that, your front goes forward. Okay.
Oh,
that's what I'm saying.
He's got the upper back there. I see. Oh yeah, B should be dead.
Exactly, B should be dead.
All right,
and so should his mom.
All right,
that should be a McCoy pancake right there.
McCoy pancake. that'd be like if there was like the Book of the Dead comes out, it's like Hank, you know, the Beast is actually be like, he turned into a McCoy pancake.
Mm-hmm.
Him and his mom. R.I.P.
R.I.P.
So but that didn't happen. You know, they're reconciling. Professor Power blasts out of the wreckage and he's like, lady, you know, you kind of got to me there, but I'm still mad, but I'm going to go away.
Yep.
Peace. And
I'm out.
Spider-Man, you know, and everybody is happy. You know what I'm saying? The Beast is happy and everybody's doing
it's
good
a very
job.
Touching ending of laying in the street and hugging.
She's, you know, it's the McCoys and girlfriend. They're all hugging each other and they're all getting
They're all happy.
They're all happy.
Everybody's
and,
happy.
And you know, look, if Beast is happy, I'm happy.
Yeah, me too.
So I'm down with that. And that's how it ends. Next issue, Tigra, plus a mini saga featuring Doctor Strange and the Scarlet Witch.
Mm. When you said Tigra, it kind of sounded like a question. You're like, Tigra?
Tigra?
Question mark?
Hey, I'm down with Tigra, man.
No, Tigra's fucking cool. It just sounded like you were like questioning Tigra.
Like they didn't know. Like yeah. They didn't plan it. They're just like, oh, maybe. Who knows?
Yeah.
Tigra? Thor?
Mm-hmm.
But that is Marvel Team Up number 124, December 1982. We will be reading the next issue of this, issue 125. Do we have like a thing? I forgot what was the thing that we did.
We were talking about if we were looking forward to the next issue.
Well, I mean, I am.
I'm excited. Like Tigra, I don't know if there's really, well, that's not true because I was going to say, I don't know if there's really any hints to what's coming, but they mentioned Tigra and then they mentioned something with Scarlet Witch and Vision.
Yeah. No, Doctor Strange.
Oh, Doctor Strange. Sorry. Yeah, I'm excited to see what both of those two things are. So.
Yeah, me too. So yeah. we'll be getting to that next week, mm-hmm. and I guess that's going to wrap it up. So.
I do want to say just one thing before we go. Just RIP to Akira Toriyama, creator of Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z. I was a humongous Dragon Ball Z fan back in the day, so very sad to hear that he has passed.
Yeah, that mm-hmm. sucks. Mm-hmm. I was never a Dragon Ball Z guy. I know my brother Mark was.
Yeah.
But I know how much... He met how much Dragon Ball Z means
to so many people. Yeah, I think it also kind of like really helped a larger portion of the American audience to recognize anime.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I mean, there were always people who were into it, but then it kind of like once Dragon Ball Z was on like Cartoon Network all the time, was like, yeah. Oh, okay. But I did see a pretty funny comic, which it was just like a 4-panel. There was these two guys being like, well, we're visiting this foreign country, but you don't know the language. Are you sure you're going to be okay? And he's like, I have the universal language. And he just turns around. He's a Goku shirt on. And this guy looks at him and goes, Goku. And the guy goes, Goku. And it's fucking true.
It's true, man. Yeah. No, you could. Yeah, you can get over just with your Gokus and your Gohans. That's awesome.
Yep.
But RIP what's his name again? I'm sorry.
Akira Toriyama.
Akira Toriyama.
Yep.
But that's it for this week's show. Please find us on the socials. I'm at Angry Hero Sean.
And I'm at Jen Stansfield on all the things.
And then also check us out on YouTube. You can find the complete collection, I believe, I got to keep double checking it, but I know the new episodes go up there too
mm-hmm.
on YouTube. Angry Hero 79
Sweet.
Is my YouTube channel, and there's a playlist that's actually linked to the description of this episode.
Oh, nice.
That I have that just goes directly to that playlist. So you don't even need to subscribe to the channel if you don't want. I would prefer if you did, mm-hmm. but if you don't want to add another subscription to your list, or you just want to listen to the episodes, great. But then those are going to be updated weekly. So if you do subscribe, and you have the bell notification, you'll know exactly where it comes up.
Yeah.
So if you're not like a general like podcast listener on like the typical platforms and you use YouTube and you get the notifications, you'll know when the show is up and you can just listen to it there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really awesome. And then also, we are on all the YouTube, not the YouTube, but the podcast platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, just about everything.
Yep.
So if there's anything you could do for us, that would be great. Please subscribe, please rate, please comment.
Mm-hmm.
But that's going to do it. So thanks for listening, and we'll catch you again next time.
Bye.